Oh my god, like death squirrels? This is huge.
Welcome to episode 183 of the PC Gamer Podcast for July 16th, 2009. This is your host, Logan Decker, and we're back from a harrowing hostage crisis with a podcast that's going to tear the ceiling right off your homes, pluck you out of your bedrooms, and fling you out into the coldest reaches of outer space. Joining me today are reviews editor Dan Stapleton.
I'm full of chicken.
Previews editor Evan Lottie.
I'm full of tuna and sort of regretting it, but... Oh.
Intern Max McGee.
All I got was a bag of oatmeal.
And podcast producer Andy Bellman.
I'm full of Big K Vanilla Coke.
I don't know what that is.
Is that stuff any good?
It's all right. It's like the off-brand because I'm too poor to buy like the real brand.
So, isn't there supposed to already be vanilla in Coke, though? Like, it's supposed to have, like, a million flavors?
Dude.
That was Dr. Pepper.
Your dream.
You missed the boat.
So it's not actually Coke.
You're right. It's vanilla cola.
Okay, so this is one of those cultural misunderstandings.
I suppose you could call it that.
Are you one of those people that calls all cola Coke?
No.
Or all soda Coke?
Everybody does.
Like, no, they don't.
You know what the worst term is?
No, they don't.
Pop. You get a pop.
Yeah,
nobody says pop. Everybody calls Coke like Coke. It's just Coke.
You've just offended everybody in the Midwest, and I think Logan just offended everybody in the South.
The mid what?
Do you ever send your intern to go get Diet Coke, and they come back with Diet Pepsi?
No, actually, we don't have Pepsi in the machine here, so that's never happened.
I did that the other week, and I was like, are you joking? You can't get Diet Coke like you get Diet Pepsi? Like, I was pissed.
That is an outrage.
Yeah.
Well, this is the United States of Midwest, is it?
Have any of you guys had Faygo soda?
What's
Faygo?
That's a slur. Not on the podcast, Evan.
Yeah,
that's
being bleeped
out.
That's rude.
I'm disappointed.
You know, did you get that from Bruno?
I think our Detroit listeners will know what I'm talking about.
Is that like Surge? But
they'll call it Pop.
No.
Only in the 1950s.
No, they still call it Pop.
What's Faygo and how can they say it without laughing?
It's a brand of soda popular in
seriously
Michigan. Yes,
and they actually say, "Give me
all the other sodas, sell it to me."
Yes,
yeah. Don't do.
Wow,
I just like how Evan is full of tuna and regret. That's
I chose unwisely.
Well, big news this week here on the podcast. We got a call from Deathlock to report that there are, in fact, death squirrels.
At large.
Yes. In Dragon Age.
Wait, what?
You will fight death squirrels in Dragon Age.
Yes, we have confirmed the presence of death squirrels in Dragon Age, and that's huge.
Eyewitness accounts.
They're, you know, because the rumors had been going around for a while, but this is a confirmation from somebody who's seen it firsthand. So we brought it to you first. I just want to get that one out of the way right off the bat. Do they explode in some
Water balloons full of blood? Was his descriptive term?
Yes,
that's going on the back of the box.
Yes,
right there.
You see this death squirrel? It's going to blow like a water balloon full of blood. You heard it here first. Death squirrels in Dragon Age. You'll get more on that very, very soon. I'm on it. I'm all over it. On to other interesting developments. Sorry we missed you last week, but lots of interesting stuff has been going on. For one thing,
like
speaking
plague.
Of Dragon Age.
Yeah, seriously.
Yes, yes. Terrible thing that makes your skin itch. Speaking of Dragon Age, the Collector's Edition is going to include a Mass Effect 2 in-game item. Is that only if you pre-order? I believe so.
Actually not.
Oh, no, really? Oh, that's fantastic.
The
pre-order through GameSpot gets you something else, doesn't it?
Yes. The pre-orders are basically, they're going to give you in-game bonuses for Dragon Age itself, experience boost, and this Feral Wolf Charm... I guess, which increases your health generation, I guess. So
experience boost. So buy a pre-order copy and it unbalances the game for you.
Oh,
so wait, what about the part about enchanted on moonlit nights by scantily clad witches?
Yeah, I think
that's what you get with the charm.
That's more like flavor text, I think.
But, man.
The most exciting part of this package for any hardcore PC gamer, Baldur's Gate fan, should be the cloth map, gentlemen.
Yeah.
Cloth map.
I haven't had a cloth map in
ages. Can you use that to like wipe up the Cheeto residue on your mouth? Is that
I don't see why not.
Is it a napkin? Is that the idea?
It's a ShamWow map, actually. They're not selling it completely.
But wait, there's more.
that would be awesome value if they printed the map on a ShamWow. But
that
is
fantastic.
I know I've never really been a sucker for any of those add-ins. And does that get anybody else really excited?
I used to be so into getting suckered in. Like, do you remember when Half-Life 2 came out? And they had the $90 edition that came with like a stupid hat.
I remember that I did not buy it.
I was like, I want 10, 10. They're like, you can only buy one. I'm like, fine, one.
I remember people were going nuts for that Halo 3 cat helmet you could get.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that thing is like incredibly worthless because not only can you not wear it yourself, but your cat will hate you.
Yeah. I did pin up my cloth Ultima, cloth map. But that, I mean, it was, even though it wasn't a detailed map, you know, it gave you an idea of which direction to go. I mean, it really was useful, and I just took some thumbtacks and pinned it up on my wall. Really useful.
Yeah, I guess. Maybe.
Plus, you know, if you're like allergies, you know what I mean. I don't know how many times you can wash it before, you know, all that stuff comes out. But
I guess the only like collector's edition stuff I have is I have the Fallout 3 Pip-Boy over on the shelf, and I have the BioShock little sister that I think Gary gave this to me. He didn't want, but I got that on my desk.
Yeah. So the other part of the Dragon Age package, which I'm not sure, it's running for $65 on PC, which isn't too bad, I guess. Tell me if you guys have a particular response to this. I guess there's three pieces of exclusive in-game content. Doesn't really say what they are. Like the Grimoire of the Frozen Waste, Final Reason. I'm guessing those are quests or just areas. Mm-hmm. And it says additional in-game content, the Stone Prisoner unlockable bonus quest, and unlockable character, Shale. That seems like almost pre-DLC to me.
Well, I mean, that's essentially what it is, yeah. I mean, it's extra content in the same way that DLC is content, although I imagine the DLC that they put out for it, they've been talking up the DLC for Dragon Age for a while, because I guess they built it with that in mind. To have a constant stream of DLC, but yeah, it's the same thing. It's just extra content.
But it's mean. It's mean.
Well, how does it mean?
Because the game is complete. That, you know, they have the spectrum of content, but they're only going to give some of this little cool stuff to the people that want to spend that extra bit of money. You know?
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean the game by itself is fine. I mean, it's not broken without that stuff, and in fact, that stuff could very well, like, not be as balanced as everything else. And for example, with Dawn of War 2, I nagged THQ and got like some of the exclusive stuff they gave to GameStop for my copy. And, you know, it just wasn't that interesting. It added like a few things in like the first few areas of the game. Like I got a couple of extra weapons that made my guys a little bit more powerful, but I only used them a little bit, and then I sold them off for experience. And, you know, it's just not that big a deal. And it's kind of neat if you're into collecting a lot of loot, if you want to pay extra money for loot, but you're not getting screwed if you don't buy that.
Plus, they might release it, you know, months later for everyone else, you know, and then, you know, if you buy the collector's edition, well, you got the drop 6 months ahead of everybody else, which, you know, I wouldn't be mad about. And I'd buy it. And even if they released it later for free, I'd be like, well, you know, I got it way back when.
Yeah.
And now, I mean, you like, punks are doing it.
Yeah. I like the thing that, you know, bothers me a little bit about these things, about this kind of add-on, is because they're when they balance the game, when they you know, do all their rigorous testing, they're not testing for that stuff.
Yeah.
So that could, if they do, it's not very much. So depending on how much effort they put into it, you know, whether it's you know, something they actually, you know, work on balancing, or something they just throw out there to appease GameStop, because GameStop wants all these exclusive items these days to make you go out and buy it there rather than online or whatever. If it's just something they threw out there, then it might make the game less fun.
Here's an interesting bonus item. The Modern Warfare 2 Prestige Edition is packing not just, not your usual bonus item here, but night vision goggles.
That is kind of cool.
That's awesome. Now, at first, when I first read that, I saw the price that was marked, and I thought, oh, my, this is what crap. You know, it was like $80 or something like that. But in fact, it's going to cost $150, I believe. $149.99, which means that they actually could be really nice, because I have the iClops from ThinkGeek, and those were, I think they're about $70, and they're really good. They actually work. You can see about, because there's a big hill. I live behind a big hill, Corona Heights in San Francisco. And I went skittering around there. I was trying to find the gophers, because you know they're there because you can see branches being pulled across the ground, by ghosts. And then they get lifted up as they get yanked into the ground. And you can see it easy, a good 30 feet with those goggles.
I no longer feel safe at night in San Francisco.
It's awesome.
It's exciting. It's kind of a cool thing. It's definitely unusual. My main prediction is that, I want to sort of see a graph of night burglaries leading up to November 11th and see the 4,000% increase following that date.
Well, you don't get any depth perception, because it's only one eye, right?
Sure.
So if you're a burglar, you're going to be like, stubbing your toe everywhere, and you step on the dog, it howls and all that. So I think we're cool there, but
it's,
I don't know.
It's still better than walking around in the dark.
That's true. You're
still going to stub your toe and step on the dog. At least this way, you'll see the dog. You'll know the dog is around there somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we'll see a mild uptick in accidental shootings more than
is Modern Warfare 3 just bundling a handgun next time?
Why not? No, there has to be proliferation, right? Like, honestly, like they can't come down from this.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Like this
with AAA games.
Now they have a taser shotgun doesn't have the wires. It fires actual shells that power themselves.
Yep.
I don't care. I'm not buying it unless it comes with its own Black Hawk helicopter.
Oh, dude.
I mean, we are kind of entering a Cold War. I mean, I don't want to call it a trend or anything, but I wouldn't expect Activision or another AAA multi-platform or exclusive big game to really, dial it down necessarily.
Yeah.
If this is the direction it's going.
Why would you not call it a trend?
There's really only been two like crazy over the top special editions I can think of.
What was the other one?
Halo Business, yeah.
Yeah.
But also there's a couple of tiers here. I think there's another $80 edition that doesn't have the goggles and has an art book and all the usual stuff, a nice case.
Yeah.
But the one with the goggles is $150. But it gets some good press. It gets the word out there, and you want to stand out. And there's another game that's standing out with their bonus stuff, which is, full nudity coming to the U.S. version of The Witcher.
That's more like it.
The ESRB label has been switched from partial nudity to nudity. Now, what this means exactly, I couldn't give you any medical detail right now, but... The CD Projekt did say the director's cut is the version of the game our developers originally intended for you to play. With a boner, I guess. I don't know. We'll see. But again, it certainly makes them stand out. And, you want to get as much press for your game as you can, right?
It makes what stand out? No,
Oh.
What? You can make the boner joke and I can't. Is that
exactly.
Is that how this works? Okay.
I'm the host. I do the boner jokes.
I see how it works. I think the real question is, will this finally make me play The Witcher?
Oh.
No, No. It has been on my two playlist for, how long has it been out? Like a year and a half?
Yeah.
Me too. I just haven't gotten around to it.
I haven't either.
Dude, yeah. Play it. What I'm guessing is, from my understanding, is that when you engage in like certain relationships can have, like a sexual part of it, but all that it shows you is like a card. It's like a playing card with a art on it. And my understanding is I played the UK version of the game. I imported it from gogamer.com. And so I actually saw all the nude stuff, and it's not like that bad. A lot of it's actually sort of out of frame the way the art is, you know, or like the model is in a certain position where you can't really see everything or something. So I don't know what the difference is going to be, but it's not a big part of the game anyway. But the game is awesome, and you should play it regardless.
So what are we missing in The Witcher?
You're missing out on such a great, like, atmospheric, living world storyline, mm-hmm. badassery, great main character, and pretty fun combat.
So was the question, what are we missing by not playing The Witcher at all, or what
were
we missing, or not, or what are we missing with the non-nudie edition?
No. What are we missing with? I mean, by not playing at all, you know.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, and
I've been meaning to, like you said, you know, for ages, you know.
Yeah. Anyway, I really thought I was gonna get playing, you know, start playing it when the enhanced edition came out, but yeah. It's still been, you know, just kind of there, but, you know, on my list, and I just and new things keep coming out and pushing it down, and I just kind of worry about it, because with an RPG like that, that's going to be a major investment.
Yeah, but you'll be sucked in, you know, you'll be like, yeah, I gotta play every time you get home, and it's very mature. It's a fantasy setting, but it's not, you know, Fable. But that's not fair to say, because I've never played Fable, so take that back.
I love it.
That
I love that game.
That is ignorant.
Yeah.
That game that you get that makes you want, just, you cannot wait to get home, you know?
Oh, yeah. And this did that for me, you know? So.
All right. I'm picking that up.
Has boobies.
Can we say that? Is that all right? This is the tip of what I fear is going to be something of an iceberg. I think I feel like this news that Remedy saying that Alan Wake's PC fate is up to Microsoft. You know, they said, you know, it's going to come out on the Xbox 360 first, and what happens after that? Hey, it's not in our hands. It's up to Microsoft. And I feel like this is almost kind of a tipping point at which people realize Microsoft is really trying to damage PC gaming, if not kill it off completely.
This is the tipping point?
Well, I know, but it's just so...
This is the icing on the cake.
Yeah.
This is the last nail in the coffin.
I always had the feeling that they were just... That it was just poorly managed, and they were just putting all their resources in the Xbox, and this is just bullshit. I mean, sorry, but
Alan Wake has been...
no question anymore. There really isn't.
Alan Wake has like, for the last, like, 2 years, it's been the only significant PC game that Microsoft has had in development, and now they're saying, oh, we're not even going to bother with that. So, screw Microsoft. And, like, honestly, who cares about Microsoft anymore? They're not a PC game publisher anymore. Who cares? Let him go.
Yeah.
And I mean, honestly, for Alan Wake, it's like, I heard the news, I'm like, oh, that sucks. And then I was like, okay, why did I want to play Alan Wake? And I honestly couldn't remember, like, what was cool about it. I remember, like seeing it 2 or 3 years ago and saying, oh, that they have some cool effects. But
2 or 3 years ago.
Right. And they're, what I remember seeing is kind of dated now. So unless they've really, like, redone it since then, which I guess they could have been, they've got to have been doing something all this time. I'm just not that broken up about it.
Mm-hmm.
I call it sour grapes if you want, but
I remember when we first read the news and you, Logan, were, you know, on a gaming blog or something, and you saw somebody's comment in the thread that was like, Alan Wake PC version up in the air, my interest in game up in the air.
That was fantastic. That really was.
I'm paraphrasing, but
yeah.
I mean, I was looking forward to, in the sense, like, hey, here's like a very, you know, seemingly very well produced adventure game that, well, sort of adventure mystery, I'm not sure exactly what it is, that connects with a lot of like what I grew up with. You know, like Lighthouse by Sierra was like a really kind of dark.
Guys named Alan.
Guys named Alan. Yeah. Indeed. So
flashlights.
I consider it a loss if it doesn't come to PC, but goddamn Microsoft, you know?
Yeah.
Like, why not? Are you really cannibalizing this mysterious user base by, you know, putting on both platforms? I mean, are they really that interested in creating this image of the 360 at this very dynamic platform with exclusive variety of titles? Like,
yes, not, they are.
It's not, but it's not going to impact anything by putting it on both or putting it on PC a month later.
I mean, they made one like, I don't know, like if you have two big exclusive titles coming at the same time as a price drop on the console, you know, some shenanigans like that, who knows? But it's just, you know, I just read the news at first. I'm like, oh, that's a drag, you know, because I was really looking forward to Alan Wake, and I'm sure they will do it on PC eventually. But, you know, there was no reason, as far as I was concerned, not to do it at the same time, because it was such a big showcase for their DX10, you know, Vista push at an Intel developer forum a couple of years ago.
Really?
And look how that worked out.
Gosh. Yeah, exactly, right? You know, oh, and I got a cool LED flashlight. And yeah, it was just such a big push. They were friendly. They were talking, yeah, this is great. Looks great on DirectX 10 and all that. And now you know, it's not so much the news that it's not going to be on, you know, that they don't know the fate of it. It's just Microsoft really has gone past the point of not caring and just seems to be aggressively
actively screwing over PC gaming.
Exactly. Like, that's the kind of tipping point I'm talking about, where they've actually turned around. Instead of just being passively just ignoring the platform, now they're pounding.
And they've been doing that ever since their announcement, ever since Vista.
I didn't want to have that feeling, but I guess, I mean, I can't really argue it either.
I've been down on Microsoft for years now. It comes as nothing they do surprises me anymore.
Yeah. So,
but I mean, so, what about all this business about Natal will work on PC too?
Yeah. Well, okay. So that let's try to detach our feelings about, you know, the Alan Wake Microsoft thing, and just as pure news, this interesting technology is coming to the PC. What do we think?
I think that what Bill Gates said about it was that it can be used for giving presentations.
Yeah.
So I mean, yeah, it's if Microsoft isn't going to make games for it, then nobody else is going to really either. So at least not for the foreseeable future. I mean, eventually some third party people will make some Xbox games for Natal, but I mean, if Microsoft will have to lead that charge, and if they're not going to make any PC games for it, then it's a presentation tool. Yeah. It's a neat toy, it's a neat tech toy, but it's not going to be for gaming.
Yeah, I mean, part of the line he used was how it can be used in the office. So whether or not it is really going to be a game application, if that's the direction they're moving, is not clear.
I wonder if people will accidentally break their displays by swinging their swing line staplers in and letting go. Oops. Actually, everybody was so excited about that when it was demonstrated, but it really didn't do all that much for me. But then again, you know, I'm older. I love my mouse and keyboard. I don't really give a crap about, I don't want to wave my arms in front of anything, or, you know, I want to get less exercise.
Hey, wake me up when they get to the Minority Report interface.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, honestly, I'm willing to embrace it on PC. If we can take just one demo with Peter Molyneux, and he can talk to us about a boy on a screen and how he's a real boy. This is a living child in your computer. He's going, like, that's just what he excels at, and it's wonderful to hear him talk about those crazy new innovative things that he thinks are wonderful. Anyway.
I'm not looking forward, actually, to my first Project Natal presentation down at the conference room.
It'd be like you're trying to, like, one of those guys on the tarmac landing the airplane, waving his
exactly.
arms.
Exactly. Wah, wah, wah. Somebody's going to get hurt, you know? It's all fun and games until...
I don't know. I mean, like, I'm not that excited about it, but you know, I wasn't that big on the Wiimote either, and yet that's selling, like, a bajillion things.
Yeah, but it's not really doing anything for hardcore gaming or, you know, enthusiasts.
Well, neither will this.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it did. I mean, come on, it did, like, let tons of people enjoy video games because they didn't have to think, you know, like, this weird, like, keyboard, what does this correspond to? You know, it's just totally, you get it the minute you hold it.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, okay, so grandma, you know, suddenly doesn't leave the house now. She just stays at home and bowls. That kind of thing. So it was pretty, that's really cool. I like that aspect. Because I show my favorite games to my friends, and they're like, wow. And it's just hard for them to get in. I know a lot of them would. They'd love games, you know, and they'd love these stories. And, they, you know, especially friends I have that, believe it or not, are into science fiction but not video games. you know they'd love it, but it's just, it's a bit intimidating. It's hard to get into sometimes. So we'll see what happens with that.
But those people are never really going to be PC gamers.
I would like to think so, but who knows? Well, at least one project has escaped Microsoft's clutches, and that would be MechWarrior. Let's hear it. How many people grew up loving MechWarrior?
I did. Max did.
Here, I'm raising my arm and other things.
Wait. I don't hear a Stapleton out there. What?
I played a little bit of it. I was never that big a fan, but it was cool.
Oh, okay.
I just didn't have that much exposure to it.
Yeah.
I do like big stompy robots.
Yes. I mean, big stompy robots is what it's all about. And MechWarrior 4 has, I mean, they're developing MechWarrior. They're kind of rebooting the whole franchise.
It's a studio called Piranha, right?
Thank you. I was just trying to dig that out of my little pinhead.
And the rights were originally owned by FASA Studio, which was then purchased by Microsoft, and then Microsoft sold off these rights to Smith and Tinker, I believe is the company that bought them.
Yes.
And it's being developed by Piranha Bytes. And so they put out a trailer of the new MechWarrior, which is pretty cool looking.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can't really tell if it's all in-game or rendered or whatnot, but at the very least, it's, you know, urban combat with recognizable mechs.
Right. Although, I don't know, the combat to me, did it seem like a little bit kind of to you, the actual combat? Because, I mean, it's just like kind of a slugfest. You're just shooting as fast as your stuff cools down.
What it represents is a lot of elite... like linking of weapons, knowing which loadouts, knowing where to shoot. It's almost like Arma 2 in a way, where the combat isn't necessarily going to be like frantic, but it's going to be like very calculated.
And if you made bad choices, you felt it.
Oh yeah. And one of those moves they did in the trailer was like, he fired everything at once. Was like, you have to transfer all power to everything, link all your weapons to a button, and then lock on. There's like a level of complication that could be like super awesome if they keep it how it was.
Yeah, I mean,
but you know what? They're not gonna. Right? Not to really rain on the parade.
I know.
They've already said that it is going to be a console lead project. It will probably come out on PC. Almost certainly come out on PC.
Wait a minute. What was that? Not to rain on the parade, but here's some rain on your parade. That was a complete misrepresentation.
I'm not saying that we shouldn't be celebrating the return of MechWarrior, because that is a great thing. I'm just saying that. You know, don't get your hopes too high, because it's probably not going to be the same simmy game that it used to be.
Yeah, I mean, this sounds like a simple thing, but I think mech games are meant to be played in first person, in the cockpit, seeing some of that control panel, having a limited perspective, you know, rotating your torso independently of your legs in the direction you're moving. I know Microsoft put out those Mech Assault games, which I guess were okay. And they're pretty much third-person, almost more action-y games rather than traditional mech games.
Yeah, but now it's just like Unreal Tournament with robots.
To some extent, yeah. So I guess that's part of what I'm hoping for. That and skirmish mode, you know, things like that. I still remember all the old cheat codes, like it's like FBI and Mighty Mouse.
You can put those to use now, because they just put out MechWarrior 4 for free, right?
Yes. Indeed. To drum up some excitement, and that is certainly very excitement drumming upping.
Free stuff is exciting.
I think that they said very, very soon. So it should be, my guess is probably by the end of the month, if not sooner. Yeah. It is coming out very soon.
They've told us to check battletech.com.
Yes.
For updates on that. But yeah, I think maybe my best memory in MechWarrior 2, I guess, was taking a Mad Cat and loading on like 10 PPCs and turning on the heat code. I mean, if you play the mech games, you know, like your weapons generate heat. That's one of the balancing tools to keep you from firing too many things at once. If you overheat, your mech shuts down. But I always equip these particle projector cannons and just fire away with cheat codes and blow things to hell. It was fantastic. Oh, and that it was like one of those games that I'd always, you know, in addition to Doom, me and one of my friends would. We'd play together, basically. One of us would aim, the other would move. And it worked really well with that game in particular because, I mean, there's a lot to manage all at once. So.
That's like being a tank crew.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, check battletech.com for the release of the free MechWarrior 4. And enjoy all the mech warrior-ness and stompy robots. Another upcoming release, they finally got an announced date for Resident Evil 5 for the PC. That's coming out on September 15th in 3D.
Whoa.
Whoa.
If you have all the hardware.
But no, it means they're going to take your whole neighborhood and transform it into, you know.
Like a PR, big PR stunt like they do in London.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so you will have the option of playing in 3D if you have envisioned 3D goggles.
And a 120 hertz monitor.
Yeah, I'm sorry, the GeForce 3D Vision 3D goggles and a 120 hertz LCD, which probably you don't have. But even so,
I know a guy.
You can still play Resident Evil 5 on September 15th. And as far as I'm concerned, that's some pretty damn good news.
I might actually play this one. I've also not really spent a whole lot of time with the Resident Evil series. Mm-hmm. Do you know if the controls on this one are supposed to be any good for the PC?
I haven't heard yet. We do have a hands-on coming up pretty soon.
That's right. We got that invite.
But if I found out that the controls weren't perfect, my head will explode. Because there's no excuse. There's none.
Sure there is. It's a port.
I mean, come on!
It is a port. I mean, didn't like the last Resident Evil just have awful, awful controls?
Yeah, but that's what I don't get. Everybody complained about the controls. They even had to fix some aspects of the controls after it was released. Haven't they learned? I mean, what's so difficult about putting a PC gamer in front of a computer with a clipboard, and then seeing if he swears.
I don't know if you guys know this.
That's not big time research.
No,
there's something about the Resident Evil series that I don't know if a lot of PC gamers, such as us, know about. Is that you can't move and shoot at the same time.
Yeah,
and that's true of this Resident Evil 5. And that kind of development is one of the things that frustrates me really, really a lot about console games sometimes. Like
it frustrates me too.
It frustrates me massively.
I mean, if you played like Resident Evil 2 or the original ones, you literally moved like a tank, right? You couldn't strafe.
Turning is a nightmare too.
You had to rotate and then move forward or backward. And I mean, this is that compromise between that old version, making it more actiony, and not making it Gears of War. You can just run around shooting anything every time. You know, it's not a straightforward action game. They have to put some limitations in place like the inventory system, for example, to keep the tension up.
But the thing is Capcom is really, really coming at the PC heavy. You know, so this is a way to sort of emphasize that, get the controls right. Street Fighter 4, great job. Keep them coming, you know?
Right, they did a good job. They did a good job with the control pad, the gamepad controls on Street Fighter 4. I haven't even tried it with the mouse and keyboard.
Yeah. Well, I think Capcom's going to get it right. I cannot believe otherwise right now because it's just the emotional jeopardy is just too much. You know? This might get a few people's heart rates up. I'm not convinced it's all that big of a deal yet, but let's talk about it. CNC4 requires a constant internet connection to play. Is this a big problem? I sound like that guy from Crossfire.
I mean, for me personally, not at all. I never ever am on a computer these days that is not connected to the internet all the time.
But does your service ever go out?
Very, very rarely. I'm on AT&T DSL, which surprisingly is pretty reliable. Although I do agree that if your service goes down and you can't play your game, that is really, really obnoxious.
Yeah.
This does open up the possibility of catastrophe because you've got two places where something could fail where you wouldn't be able to play the game that you legitimately purchased and paid for. You've got your ISP that could screw up, mm-hmm. and you've got EA's servers that could screw up.
Yeah.
Which would make your purchase worthless, and that does take away some of the security you feel when you buy a physical box.
Yeah,
that doesn't have. It's not like an ongoing subscription, not a subscription service, but an actual product. But personally, for the amount of time that you know most people are going to be playing this game, I don't think it's going to really affect the way you play.
Yeah,
it has the potential to, but practically speaking, probably not.
I really don't like it, but the more and more and more I think about it, you know, I just realize that our platform is hammered by piracy. It is absolutely under attack, and it, you know, I mean, Concessions have to be made to some extent. I don't necessarily like this one.
But will this actually stop piracy? Probably not.
Probably not. But I guess they have to feel like they have to do something.
Right. I mean, their logic is that CNC4 is going to be kind of a departure from the CNC formula. It's going to have classes where you level up, kind of Battlefield-ish, really.
Mm-hmm.
You level up and unlock new units and new abilities and things like that. And they want to be able to track your stats so that you don't cheat and just go edit a text file somewhere and unlock everything.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to keep all that server side. That makes sense if you, like, that argument would make sense if that's all limited to multiplayer. Mm-hmm. But stopping mm-hmm. me from playing single player when I'm offline is kind of obnoxious.
Yeah.
But, you know, it is aimed at stopping piracy from, you know, people buying downloading the single player game and hacking that and playing that, yeah. to their heart's content. But I really think it'll probably be cracked. Like yeah. everything else ever has been.
Yeah. Plus, you know, and then also there's another problem where, okay, because it wants to collect stats for your single player, you know, achievements and stuff like that. And,
well, it's actually across all the modes of play. I mean, you'll have stats that you, or things that you unlock in single player, which you can then take and play with on a multiplayer, and then you'll have things you unlock in multiplayer that you can then take and play in single player.
Yeah, I just worry about that becoming more commonplace, you know, because I'm really not going to go over a 1200 word EULA every time I install a game and try to figure out, okay, it requires an internet connection. What else is it collecting? You know, what rights have I given up just by clicking on this? Okay. You know, I'm not going to read every single one, and it's going to piss me off and turn me off on the platform when there's a scandal a year or two down the line when we find, oh, well, you know, it was collecting all these other statistics, you know, and selling them to we just go into a whole new area where
it opens some bad doors.
Yeah, it really does. You know, so I don't begrudge them this, but it just seems to be a doorway towards other problems. And I just wish we could find some standard, you know, that everybody agreed on, which so far appears to be the closest thing we've got is stuff like Steam and Impulse.
Mm-hmm. Not even really Impulse. I mean, they've got their new GUI DRM system,
yeah.
But we still got to see if that actually works. It's still being rolled out.
Steam has one as well.
Steam is the DRM.
But they've got a new thing that's similar to Goo.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's like a packaged executable. But they haven't launched anything, I don't think, yet with that system. Let's hear it from the listeners who we haven't heard from in a couple of weeks.
Hi, this is Ronan. I heard about that StarCraft 2 not being able to be played on LAN. I understand that you can get authentication online, but you're going through the web. So I don't see too many houses with a lot of web connections for multi-computers. And as far as for LAN parties, still, I mean, you know, it's different playing online with all your friends and such, but the parties that you want to have, the people actually physically there, so you can, you know, yell at them and whatnot, and eat and such. Anyhow, that's my concern about that. I don't think that's going to be very fun taking that away from us, and I'm sure the Koreans probably don't like that either. Bye.
I think that's kind of a misinterpretation of what's going on, or like not misinterpretation, because that is a limitation, yes. But I think most places anywhere you go that has a broadband connection, I mean, most serious gamers who have it available will have a broadband connection. And all you have to do is plug that network into your broadband connection and everybody can play fine. So I don't think that's going to be as big a problem as in most cases as people think it will be.
Most people have routers.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's just all you need is like, for example, a wireless router and just plug the computers that people bring over into the wireless network, or, you know, plug in a wireless adapter, or you can plug it in the hard line or whatever you want, and you're online and you're networked and it's fine. So
I will say too, sorry to interrupt. If you ever need a long networking cable,
go to monoprice.com. I think I got a 100-foot cable for about, I'm trying to check what the exact price is now. When I bought my 80 or 100-foot cable, it was like $16 shipped.
Nice.
Wow. That's a
really good deal.
Yes. So like any HDMI cables, you know, converters, things like that, it's really, really wholesale.
I remember paying for a 100-foot Cat 5 cable. I paid at least $50.
Hey, PC Gamer, this is Justin, a.k.a. The Typer from Michigan. I was playing Dead Space again recently, and I found myself both challenged and still scared to death in the game. But games like Dead Space can lose the fresh feeling because they contain scripted encounters and scare moments. Dead Space did a good job giving players the feeling that an enemy could pop out from anywhere. And if you look, there were plenty of air shafts and vents for enemies to come through. So what if endless replayability in games was transported over to horror games like Dead Space? Once a player gets through an established tutorial level, maybe a horror AI director could take over, allowing for endless possibilities to be scared in every playthrough of the game. Also, ammo and health will be given as needed, like in Left 4 Dead, pacing the players as they play along. Thanks for listening. Keep up the great work on the podcast, the magazine, and the game nights. Keep up the great work, everyone. Bye.
I'm a little confused. Is he saying that he wants a horror game like Left 4 Dead, as if Left 4 Dead is not a horror game?
I think he wants the Left 4 Dead, like, director AI in Dead Space.
Right. It seems like six of one half done to the other. But I guess he wants a single-player game like that.
I'll sign up.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly would be cool. I mean, anything that increases replayability is fine by me.
I remember there was an interesting experiment a while back. It was, I believe the game was called Nosferatu, maybe 4 or 5 years ago. And it was a horror game, but every time you played, you had to save all these people in a giant mansion filled with the undead. But every time you played, it rearranged all the rooms. Mm. So you never did know where everything was going to come through. It wasn't a huge success, you know, all the rooms looked pretty much the same because they had to, you know. But, you know, you never, every time you went into the mansion, every time you broke through the gates, you had no way. It's not like you could go on a beeline, you know, through the mansion. You just had to feel your way through, and you never knew where things were going to come from. But it really was it's a pretty old game. But you can still check it out if you found it in a bargain bin somewhere. It was pretty clever.
I think one of the reasons that the nobody really does that kind of thing where you randomize all the enemy appearances in a scripted game like or in a single player game like Dead Space is that you can do a lot of things with scripted events that you can't do with randomness because and you're relying on the AI, and the AI just isn't smart enough really yet to do like unpredictable things. Mm-hmm. It can do the same things in different areas where they didn't do it before. But if you script an enemy doing something like bursting out of the chest of a corpse or something like that, or coming through or busting through a wall or something like that, you can't do that with a random AI. So it's a trade-off. I mean, you go for the more scripted horror movie feel where you can really control the suspenseful moments, but they only work once, or you can go for the less suspenseful but more random moments. It's two different approaches.
Right? Or you could just relax the sort of the randomization rules, so like the thing could burst out of not just chest, but like telephones and tissue boxes, that kind of thing. You never know, you know, where it's going to come from next.
From a practical standpoint, though, in terms of making that game, they then have to design all of the possible things that enemy could burst out of and make that burst outable. So it's
that's formidable.
It is very formidable task.
I honestly wouldn't be surprised if we saw more developers based on the success and, you know, gameplay design of Left 4 Dead developing their own sort of proprietary director-like technologies. I mean, for one thing, it lets you generate and iterate on level design and content that much more quickly. I mean, that's part of the reason why we're seeing Left 4 Dead 2 so quickly, and it was surprising to some people because, I mean, obviously a lot of things need to be designed at level, but to some extent you tell the director, give it some variables and adjust some stuff, and it takes care of the rest, you know, to a lesser extent than, you know, designing every single object and enemy and boss.
Yeah, there's a little bit less manual work going on there of placing everything, although they do have to tweak things to make sure that like an insurmountable enemy force doesn't attack you at the wrong time. So there is a lot of manual tweaking going on there, but you don't actually have to go in and say, I want six guys here.
You know, mm-hmm. this brings up an interesting thought. It's like, is there ever going to be a time or a mod maybe for Left 4 Dead that lets that puts the some player, actual person, in the seat of the director and gives you, you know, cooldowns on when you can spawn tanks or spawn like horde rushes and stuff. And so it's like a player is sitting over you, you know, kind of messing with you the whole time.
A dungeon master.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, I without knowing a lot more about the technology than we do, it's impossible for us to say.
I know, but I mean, it could be any game, you know? It could be some game right. That's not made yet will allow players to kind of mess with each other.
Yeah, it's entirely possible. I mean, there have been plenty of games that have dungeon masters.
Yeah, so. Mm-hmm. It's funny you mentioned that. I was at Will Smith of Maximum PC and Norm. It was Will Smith's house with Norm and Greg Viderman last night. We were playing a board game called Last Night on Earth. It's like a zombie-themed board game, and it was really fun. It kind of illustrates that mechanic you're talking about where one player plays with the zombies, and they're moving them around and orchestrating everything, and the other players are individual survivors, and it was really fun. That's all. Just made me remember that.
Cool, yeah. I mean, that'd be awesome. It's like a commander view in Battlefield 2 with zombie hordes that spawn, you know, on a cooldown. And you set them up, and players have to move through some space, and I don't know, cool mod idea maybe.
It would be a cool mod. Hopefully, somebody is already hard at work at that with the modding tools.
Yeah,
it wouldn't surprise me at all.
It seems
like very
easy.
Poor clean.
Yeah,
I mean, really, if you wanted a very bare bones version of that, what you could do is be an admin on a server or host a Left 4 Dead server,
and just start spawning things.
Yeah, you can turn on SV cheats, and you let the survivors do their thing, and you can drop boomers in but very easily. You can bind that to a certain key and put them in certain spots. You can spawn more horde. You can spawn weapons and, you know, basically anything in the game that's an object you can put in there. It's not as, you know, it wouldn't be a full mod, but it might be kind of fun.
Well, yeah, and if you can do that with just cheat codes, then it's entirely possible that you would be able to build that kind of mod.
Yeah, it'd just be a matter of creating some triggers. And yep.
Yeah. They've certainly done much more elaborate mods with other source-based games. So
yeah,
certainly.
Hey, PC Gamer Podcast, this is Marcus in Los Altos, California, aka Nightwing94 on Steam. My question today relates to LucasArts. They recently announced that they're going to announce something world exclusive at Comic-Con. What announcement do you think this could be? Personally, I hope it's a revival of the Jedi Knight franchise. What say you? I really appreciate the answer. Thanks. Bye.
Hey, Los Altos, California. That's my hometown. That's where I grew up. Anyway, I agree. As a revival of the Jedi Knight franchise would be awesome. I would also accept a revival of the X-Wing franchise.
Yeah, TIE Fighter.
My God.
Oh my Pretty God. Please.
Ugh, like, with the way LucasArts is just being fangasm centric, could be anything.
Yeah, that they seem to have a little bit of a spark left in them now.
Yeah.
And they're back to the old mode of outsourcing everything. For a while they started to internalize a lot of development and do stuff themselves, but I guess they laid off a bunch of people not too long ago.
The Monkey Island remake, Secret of Monkey Island, is internal.
Right, but that's a pretty small project, yeah. Relatively speaking. I mean,
it's mostly art.
You're updating an old game rather than creating an entirely new game. So Unless what they're going to announce is they're going to do that with everything else, like all their old games, like old adventure games, which could very well be the announcement. Maybe Grim Fandango or Day of the Tentacle or whatever.
I think it's going to be TIE Fighter.
Wow. That would be...
Yeah, let's get everybody's hopes up for TIE Fighter. It's totally not going to be TIE Fighter.
PC?
Or, no, I mean, or Jedi Knight. It's going to be TIE Fighter or Jedi Knight. Probably Jedi Knight.
I honestly don't think it's going to be.
Well, I mean, where does Force Unleashed fall into the category of? Is that more of like a Jedi Knight?
It falls into a yawn category.
Well, I mean,
the game is composed of middleware, basically.
Well, that doesn't mean it can't be good. And the problem, as I understand, I'd never played it, but the problem was that it was just too simplistic, too much, you know, pushing the win button.
There's like eight different physics technologies in there.
But that doesn't mean the game is bad. You could have eight different,
and yet.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but that I'm just saying that in itself does not mean, you know, that the game is not going to be good. what meant that what made the game not as exciting as it could be was just that that those eight different physics technologies did not come together in a good way.
The next one will be Middle Werewolf. Right. It's growing hair.
PC exclusive X-Wing TIE Fighter would be unbelievably.
I think that's what it's going to be. I think
it'll be the tentacle. I think they're going
to. I'm a prophet.
They want to keep people on this retro re-release train. They're going to, like, I like Logan's theory he was talking about earlier this week. Like, obviously, they're not going to put out their biggest, most recognizable hits, Grim Fandango, first. They're going to get people excited about this revival, get them on track, you know, get them into the subscription program, so to speak, and, you know, slowly dole out more and more popular stuff and bring more people in.
It could be another joint announcement with Telltale. I mean, they announced the fact that this announcement is coming so soon after the Monkey Island stuff could mean that they were waiting to see what the reception to Monkey Island would be. And since Monkey Island has been such a success, as far as we can tell, it's been, you know, been topping a lot of Steam charts, I believe. Then it could be they were waiting to see how that was, and now they might announce more of this kind of deal where they're going to continue old franchises.
Yeah.
So speaking of Telltale, I wanted to touch on this real quick with you guys. They were doing something on the release day that I thought was interesting. I believe it's still available through the store, Telltale Store, where you could purchase the entire season of Tales of Monkey Island. I believe it's 5 episodes for $35.
That's the only way you can buy it. You can't buy it.
That was the only way you could do it. But very cool to me, at the end of the season, for the price of shipping, probably $5 or something like that, they would mail you a, you know, collector's edition, quote-unquote, DVD of the entire season to keep for yourself, hard copy.
I'm That's so cool. glad that you brought that up, because that is badass.
They did that with Sam and Max, too.
Oh, really?
You might have to purchase it, now that I remember. But I know they have an option of sending you a bonus disc.
I mean, I think everybody in the whole world should know that.
I mean, for me, it was just exciting to see. I mean, this is something that would really work better on PC than anything else. It's a perfect business model for an episodic game. You get the immediacy and, like, month-to-month sort of subscription feel of content from an episodic game, and you get a hard copy at the end to hold on to and sort of put on your wall.
I don't know. I mean, the hard copy, and if it works like Telltale's other games, would still require online activation. So to me, there's not a whole lot of difference between that and just, like, if you bought it from Telltale's site, you just download the files and then burn it to your own DVD. You know, save yourself $5 unless it comes with, like, some extra packaging or something that you want to collect that.
It's just cool to me, you know, to have that library.
It is a nice option, although increasingly I just love the convenience of having all my games available online. And not have to shuffle around discs, not have to have a big binder full of discs.
Yeah.
I still have that, but I much prefer being able to go into Steam and say, oh, okay, I want to reinstall this, click download, make it, and, you know, it goes. I don't have to worry about scratch discs. I don't have to worry about anything like that.
I wonder if you can sell it.
I don't know what
interesting
Telltale's policy is on that.
Because that would add a lot of value to that product. You know, if when you were done, you know, you could, there's a secondary market, you know, that makes it all the more valuable. That makes me willing to put down an extra 10, 15, you know?
Hmm. I guess a publisher might hesitate, you know, with that question specifically, but
I'm sure.
I mean, we've had a couple questions on it in months past with people talking about, you know, how they value physical copies. And I think there is a segment of PC gamers. Some of my friends that play Arma, they're looking forward to it so much. They're willing to wait. They still don't have a copy of the game.
Mm-hmm.
They're willing to wait, you know, 2 or 3 weeks until they could get it in the mail and have it for themselves to hold on to.
The physical disc.
Yeah, the physical disc, the boxed copy. It might be a nice alternative for some people if they offered both at once, you know. Download it now and we'll send you a copy in the future for $5 or $10 more.
Yeah.
I mean, Logan, you talk about like being willing to drop $5 or $10 or $15 for that option, so that you could resell it.
Well, I'm just saying it adds value in my head, you know, to that. It makes me less worried about letting go of money, you know, knowing that I have that option. Just like having a physical product is sort of comforting because I can delete it from my hard drive. I don't have to worry about going to their servers to download again or, you know, having limited installs, anything like that. It's just, it's more valuable to me.
I'm just saying that it's very unlikely that you would be able to get more than $10 or $15 for selling that game secondhand.
Well, sure. But I mean, again, it's in my head. It's just seems more valuable to me, you know? And it makes me love the platform more, you know, because it's such a great idea. I get something right then. I don't have to go to a store. I don't have to do any of that stuff. And yet I get the good stuff you get when you go to a store, which is the boxed game and all that. It's like they're giving me the best of both worlds.
Exactly. It's,
I mean, and I think that's brilliant. And at the same time, they managed to get me to pay for a whole season rather than just one game.
Yeah. It's convenience, and it's also almost a memento of your experience with the game. You completed it, you know, have this to hold on to.
Yeah.
It's almost a trophy in that way.
I mean, you're going to have to use your account to sign in when you play it, so you're probably not going to be able to resell it. So.
Right.
Sure, that's, I mean, that's possible. Yeah, yeah. I'd still be cool with that.
No, me
but
either.
I remember, you know, if Firefly had another season, I would have done that. I would have bought the whole season in advance, watched it digitally as soon
no
as they
question,
came out.
No question, dude. Are you and kidding? Then
got the boxed at the end.
Holy crap.
Just even if I never watched the episodes again, just to have it, because I loved that thing, you know?
It's really surprising. TV doesn't have a means for doing that, actually. Now
that's actually a pretty cool model, actually, for an episodic.
Yeah, I'd be all over that.
There was actually they were trying to do that for a while, I think, with Firefly in particular, but really? Never got off the ground. But because of rights issues with Fox.
Yeah,
Fox
and, for sure.
But I mean, although personally I've kind of stopped buying DVDs because I get stuff streamed online now. I don't own the physical copy, but I can watch it whenever I want. So I kind of like that convenience more. And part of it is because I am by nature such a pack rat. Like I keep all my old crap, and I really try and work hard not to keep that old crap, because otherwise I have mountains of crap. So I love not even having it in the first place.
Let's talk about playlists. Me, I have been playing MechWarrior 4. That's the great thing about working at PC Gamer, is that when you want something, you turn and there are shelves and shelves and shelves of games. They're all over the place. You know what? It's exactly what you think it is.
It's true. I've seen it.
Exactly like what you think it does. It's just games all over the place. And so yesterday I went on a big pack rat hunt, and I fished it out. Yes! Found it. I found 2, 3, and 4. Don't know where the original one is, though.
There are two problems with these shelves, though. Two problems.
Yeah.
One is that they're in no way organized.
No, they are not.
It's as if like it's as if like a giant like a boomer full of games exploded.
Yeah.
And the other thing is that a lot of it has been pretty picked over. Like the really high profile stuff. Like a lot of that has been swiped for personal collections. I know I'm guilty of that in a couple of cases.
That's where they went.
There's Starfleet Command 3 I grabbed. But so I know a lot of the stuff we have up there, like there's Tabula Rasa, we've got a Hellgate London up there, stuff you actually can't play anymore.
Boxed.
Yeah, the collector's edition.
Of there's BioShock, Half-Life 2. Commander.
Yeah, and we do have a lot of good stuff too, but it's not a comprehensive collection as well.
I've got a shelf behind me with games too, guys. It's got two stacks of games. It's like huge, man.
Isn't that cute? No.
So I fired up MechWarrior 4 and I'm just gonna be digging that for ages. I kind of gave up on Ghostbusters.
Busting didn't make you feel good.
It didn't do for me all the things that I hoped it would do for me. And I'm still trying to get into Treen, but I just started, so I'm not going to go off on that.
Is it Treen or Trine?
You know, I don't know. Anybody?
I think it's Trine, because Treen sounds too much like Latrine.
Oh, it does sound like Latrine.
I'm pretty sure it is Trine in the narration, too.
Oh, okay, Trine. Sorry about that. Not Latrine. Although Latrine would be an interesting game.
They call it the Trine.
The Trine. All right, yeah.
Excellent.
How about you, Evan?
Still more Arma. I can't pull myself away from it. It's come to this where I've created a Picasa web album of my photos of screenshots.
Oh my god.
Whoa.
Of which, let's see, there are...
You know, when you start putting together screenshots, you're in for it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm commemorating all my experiences. There's 464 megs of the stuff.
Flickr doesn't even let you do that, do they? They don't let you post screenshots anymore.
Flickr's ridiculous.
Wow, is that even legal?
Licensing. Yeah, I don't know.
So, is it legal? Yeah, it's legal. They can do whatever they want.
No, but just that vulgar number of screenshots.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So I'm going to call
out... dirty.
I'm going to call out the two best things I've done in Arma so far in the past week. So in the mission editor, you can... It's really flexible. It's kind of hard to use, but... So you can place any... There's like a wildlife section, basically. You know, there's animals in the game because you're in this big landscape in Russia. But you can set the player to spawn as that animal. So I made this little... I call it Operation Goat Gauntlet. And I might actually... I'll probably later this week and next week, I'll throw it on the comments thread or something. I'll link to it for you guys that have the game. And it's kind of like Reverse Frogger, where you're in this... You're in this long highway, like in an open field, and on either side, one side of the highway, there's, you know, U.S. Marines and tanks and APCs and a couple helicopters, and the other side, there's, you know, the opposing force with equivalent stuff. And, you know, walking up, you basically, as a goat, have to walk up the highway and, you know, sort of weave between these obstacles and debris and whatnot while a massive land battle is going on over you.
That's awesome.
So, I think Reverse Frogger technically would be a car trying to cross a road with a bunch of frogs coming at
it. Yeah.
Can we do that in Arma?
We
can do goats instead of frogs.
I know one of the things you can do is you can attach with a certain script any type of weapon to any object. So I can attach machine guns to a cow. If
that'll work. I'll take it.
Okay, great. So the second thing... that really stood out. This is like on Monday, I think. Dan and I and Norm and Alex from MaxPC and Will were on this 5-player co-op mission. We're going to objective and we land our helicopter and there was this pickup truck in the distance, right? It was, you know, maybe 500 meters away or something. And Norm has a Javelin missile, which is a shoulder-mounted missile launcher and it uses a radar lock system. So it's not a manual fire. You know, it locks onto something and it automatically hits it, basically. So Will Smith of MaxPC again, he says to Norm, "Hey Norm, I bet you can't hit that with a rocket launcher. This is Will's first time in the game; doesn't really know how everything works. It's a stationary truck, like 500 meters away. We're like, okay, this should be funny. We're just like messing around, right? It's just gentleman's bet. And you know, Norm lines it up, and there's a lot of anticipation. We're all being quiet, and the rocket just, you know, takes this parabolic huge arc into the truck and hits it." And it explodes like 300 feet into the air.
It was pretty beautiful.
It was amazing. I took a screenshot of it that I'll share with you guys.
I think Will owes Norm $5. We should see if he's paid up.
Yeah, unfortunately, the next day, Norm had to get his wisdom teeth out, so he couldn't buy him lunch. But, I mean, just those kinds of like playful things where you have these rigid rules, right, of, you know, realism and things have to be accurate and you're playing war for real. And then you're just bending them and breaking them and being playful. It's just, those kind of moments are what I like best about the game, I guess. Sorry if that took too long.
Yeah, that was actually my first experience with Arma as well that night, because I had been running into a problem. The only thing that Windows 7 has ever had a problem with for me is certain games have sound issues with it. I know like. Mirror's Edge, like the sound in the cutscenes didn't work, and I forgot what the other one was, but I was able to solve the previous problems by downloading this program called Creative Alchemy. It's a program that Creative Labs put out to bridge some gaps in sound driver problems with Vista, by adding the EXE to that program, it fixed that problem. But with Arma, I started it up and I went into the tutorials and I took like two steps and all of a sudden it makes this awful noise, like, you know, like really, really loud, like staticky, you know, weird noise. I'm like, holy crap, did something like explode behind me? And I look around, nothing happened. I'm like, okay, I'll take another few steps and it makes the noise again. So it's like every few steps I took, it made this like really distorted, awful noise. So I just couldn't play the game like that, and sound is a big part of it, so I didn't want to play with the sound off. Eventually, and just before this time, I figured out that if I plugged in some USB headphones, I could it worked that way. It apparently has a problem with my with my Creative Sound card, even using the Creative Alchemy thing. So for those of you who are thinking about upgrading to Windows 7, know that 99% of everything will work fine. That which does not, ARMA is the first thing that I've had any significant problem with.
And there's still admittedly some serious bugs in the game visually. I mean, you'll get like flickering textures at some points and stuff. So it's in need of a good patching for sure.
I guess my biggest problem with ARMA is that it's stolen my demigod team.
That's true.
Evan and Norm, kept playing ARMA, and especially when I couldn't get it working, it was really pissing me off because I couldn't join in there, and I couldn't play demigod except unless I wanted to play with the commoners, which I always end up on a terrible, terrible team and get my butt kicked. I was lacking for playmates for a while there.
Oh, hey, did we tell people what happened with our match?
Oh, didn't we talk about that? I guess we talked about it in the comments thread for last podcast.
That's right. I couldn't remember.
But just as a follow up we were talking about we were going to take on Gas Powered Games at Demigod, and we played them in two matches, and we wiped the floor with them. it was actually a little bit embarrassing for them, but yeah, we whooped them pretty hard. In our next issue, we've got a big spread on our strategy and their commentary, what they thought about what we did and their thoughts on balancing and things.
Will you tell us what you have been playing?
Me?
Yes.
Oh, well, I've played some ARMA. I played all the way through Trine. I beat Trine.
Ooh. You did? All the way through?
I did.
Did you like recommend it?
I do. If you're into that kind of thing, it's a very well made game.
Oh, but I think I am into it.
It's and like one of the things I really like about it was the animations. It's really a gorgeous side scroller. For anybody who doesn't know what it is, it is a side scrolling kind of physics based puzzle solver. You have three characters. You can play it in co-op, but on the PC, it's kind of you would have to do it all around one PC with two controllers plugged in, who cares? So I was playing single player, which means you push 1, 2, and 3 to cycle through these to instantly switch between these three characters. There's a wizard, a warrior, and a thief. So you're using their different abilities to solve puzzles. And it's pretty cool. That's all the solutions you can come up with. There is one combination where the wizard creates a platform in the air, and then the thief uses her grappling hook to swing over pretty much any obstacles. That solves probably more things than it should, but it's still a very very fun little game. The only problem, the thing that keeps me from recommending it, is that it is $30. Which is a little bit more than it's probably worth. Might wait for it to go on sale on Steam, but it was a good time. It was a fun little puzzle.
Okay, that's inspiring. I'll keep playing it then. I just sort of waiting it to pick up a little bit, but
yeah, it does go a little bit slow, and the RPG progression element is not very well realized. Mm-hmm. But I enjoyed it. I felt compelled to keep playing. I didn't hang it up. Cool. And then I also went back and finished last night. I finished Xenoclash. I'd gotten about 60 or 70% of the way through it, and finally got around to finishing it. And that is such a damn trippy game. That is a really, I want to know what kind of peyote they were on when they designed those characters. Yeah. 'Cause that game is just nonstop weird. But it's also got one of the best hand-to-hand combat systems I've seen in a first-person perspective game ever. It's difficult but enjoyable. I almost wish they had a multiplayer setup for that. Because some lively fisticuffs. And
every game should have lively fisticuffs. Even Nancy Drew.
And also, I've been playing a lot of games this week. Actually, I've a lot of different games. I also played the new Tales of Monkey Island. Played that with my wife. She was a big Monkey Island fan from way back. And I had actually never played the original, so this is my first experience with Monkey Island. And so we kind of took turns playing and thinking about the puzzles, and we beat that, and it was a lot of fun. It was very, very, very enjoyable to play, you know, switching off like that.
I'm impressed that the good doctor has able to carve out time.
Well, they do give her one day off a week, so we had a lot of fun playing.
So
that.
Lazy.
And it was how do you think I feel? It was a very funny game. And we just started playing the special edition of The Secret of Monkey Island.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll have more impressions on that next week.
Right on. Mr. Bauman, what have you been up to?
I, too, have been in the depths of Tales of Monkey Island. That was like last week when we didn't do the show. I had finished that up. Loved every second of it.
Really? Awesome.
Swashbuckling moment.
There were a couple of puzzles that were a little bit frustrating for us, but
I mean, most of the things I worked through eventually. There was one I was just trying to get the guy off the boat. Do you remember that?
Yeah, that one took me a while too.
For some reason, I didn't click to do what I was supposed to do, until a little while in, and I was like, "Duh, that's so easy." Anyway, I really enjoyed the fact of writing. I had to write the sequence down of the map. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I
haven't had to write something down in a long time in an adventure game. There's something compelling about that kind of, you know, dedication to the art form. And then I got into Empire Total War, started playing that, the campaign, the Road to Independence campaign. Is that what it's called?
I think so, yeah.
But yeah.
That's another one that's been on my to playlist for a while and just haven't gotten into it because I'm afraid it's going to suck up too much time.
Exactly. That was on my to playlist, and then it went on sale like 2-3 weekends ago. For $25 or something ridiculously awesome. And so I picked it up and started playing it, and so far it's a lot like Rome to me, Rome Total War, which initially I was way into, and then eventually just sort of the interest just totally fell off, like took a nosedive. So I hopefully my interest is still like strong after a few more days with Empire Total War.
Have you run into any bugs?
Well, you know what? At first my system kept, you know, stalling, getting the different square patterns across the screen. And I know that's from my video card overheating because it does it all the time. And so I was like, why is my shit overheating? And I looked inside, like all my case fans had died. Like none of them were turning.
What?
Yeah. And so I had to get a whole bunch of new case fans to like help vent out some of the air in the hot summer. Once I did that, I haven't had any troubles. So.
Okay. So yeah, nothing that was the game's fault.
Not really, no.
Oh, that's good. In the dark little corner over there, being absolutely silent as a mouse, is Max McGee.
Hello.
What's up with that? What have you been doing over there?
I didn't realize you were here.
I am entranced listening to the four of you talk.
He's just been sitting over there, like, you know, with cheese and crackers or something. And
actually, I do have cheddar cheese squares over here from Trader
Joe's. Yeah, see? Figures. What have you been playing this week?
Well, yeah, watching you guys deliver the complete beatdown to Gas Power Games got me right back into Demigod. Which, by the way, were we able to do anything with the replays from those games? Because I would be interested in seeing those.
Unfortunately not. The replays cut out after about 3 to 5 minutes.
Oh, what?
Yeah, the replay functionality is not really fleshed out yet in version 1.2, they're planning version 1.2 will have they're gonna beef that up and make it actually work. But yeah, the replays just stopped working.
Okay,
very,
well,
very unfortunate.
That's too bad. But yeah, I've been playing a lot of Queen of Thorns. She's my demigod of choice right now because I really like being able to play the support role with the Bramble Shield.
Mm-hmm.
So I play just about every night. It's my go-to game with my friend Tice from back home, and he plays Rook, so he'll roll in as the Rook. I'll hit him up with the shield, take care of any minions that are running around him, and he'll do damage to the other demigods or to the towers. But when I'm not playing that, when I'm waiting around for other people to join our game, I've been playing this freeware game called Vanguard Princess, which is a beautiful 2D fighter from, and I'm totally going to screw up his name, Tomaki Sugino, who apparently used to work on several different Capcom titles, and he just threw this game together using freeware. And yeah, it's free to download. It's a bit tricky to set up. You have to go into the language settings and change your non-Unicode program language to Japanese. Or you can download some emulators, but they're kind of buggy.
How does it compare to Street Fighter 4?
Well, it's more comparable to games like Guilty Gear or Blaze Blue, which just came out.
How does it compare to a game I've ever heard of?
Oh, okay. It's a bit simpler than Street Fighter 4. All the characters, their moves are all done pretty much the same with quarter turn forward and one of the attack buttons. It's very flashy, very fast, much faster than Street Fighter 4. But and it's totally free. So I mean, and it also supports the 360 gamepad, which is definitely the way to go.
Alrighty then. I'm sure the Vanguard Princess community will be grateful for your plug there. There's pretty, a Vanguard Princess in all of us. That's what I like to think.
Pretty princess.
This is Logan Decker, your Vanguard Princess, and I'm giving you a direct order to send us your questions in MP3 format to pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com. That's pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com, or just call us toll-free at 877-404-1337 at extension 724 and record your question there. Remember, we want it brief and clean. You can also subscribe to our awesome magazine by heading over to pcgamer.com and letting us know where we should send our fantastic issues. We're also looking for gamers who crave instant fame by having their awesome screenshots and photos of their rigs and gaming setups printed in the magazine itself. Send them to letters@pcgamer.com, and you just might see your handiwork in the PC Gamer letters section and read the entire world over. For the PC Gamer podcast crew, this is a rock legend, Logan Decker, saying thanks for listening, and we're looking forward to getting together with all of you again next week. So yeah, so check battletech.com for TECH for the God, what was that? I pulled Glenn back.
I love my BattleTech.
I was going down the list, but it's been so many downers. I want to say something nice before we go into the CNC thing.
Yeah.
So
MechWarrior, we never got to that.
We didn't talk about that last week?
We didn't podcast.
We weren't here last week. Okay. Let's see.
So you might transition. So Microsoft used to own the rights to Mech.
Okay. Everything. Oh, right.
It's been saved from Microsoft's clutches.
Okay.
Play Monkey Island.
Yay!
Yay!
Woo! All of a sudden it makes this awful noise like...